Now on RTE Radio 1, we join Justin McCarthy for World Report.
Good morning. On today's programme, we hear how the Croatian city of Split is dealing with the problems caused by having too many tourists, and we take a walk on the Camino. But first we go to Finland and the city of Lappeenranta, which is just 25 kilometres from the Russian border. Many of its citizens have close ties to Russia, but Vladimir Putin's war in Ukraine has altered life for those people, who have seen changes to their rights and freedoms and to how they're perceived by others. From Lappeenranta, Owen O'Sullivan reports.
The southeast Finnish city of Lappeenranta has long had a close relationship with neighbouring Russia, located 3 hours' drive from St. Petersburg and only 25 kilometres from the border itself. Before lockdown, Lappeenranta happily hosted 1.8 million Russian tourists a year. They would come to visit the local picturesque lake of Saima, or simply enjoy a day's shopping, made easier by the fact that most proprietors spoke Russian. But since the invasion of Ukraine, things have changed. You can no longer pay for goods in Finland using Russian accounts or credit cards. And as of the 30th of September, Finland has closed its border completely to all Russian travellers, except for students and people with what the authorities deem legitimate reasons for travel. What remains now in Lappeenranta are the 3,000 Russian residents and 160 students who attend the local technical university. On the outside, daily life continues as usual, but through simple conversation, it quickly becomes clear that much has changed for these people. "I've had to become independent much quicker than I expected," Yevgenia Yefimenko tells me, a 20-year-old student who has been studying mechanical engineering in Lappeenranta for a year. Yevgenia now must have a part-time job to help pay for her tuition fees and housing, as she can no longer receive funding from her parents in Russia. Although her mother and father can still visit, having a direct family member in Finland being considered a legitimate reason to travel, they are only allowed to bring 100 euros in cash across the border. A difficult task, since Russians struggle to exchange rubles to other currencies in their home country. Yevgenia is just one of many young Russians facing challenges abroad. Financially, they have two options. Either find a job in Finland, which is difficult without a permanent residency, or come up with creative and potentially illegal ways to access their finances. Somebody who was forced to take the latter is Edward, a young man who did not want to give me his full name, as he fled Russia to escape military conscription. Edward managed to enter Finland only days before the border shut down. Cycling to avoid the day-long car queues, Edward left his life in St. Petersburg behind with only 3 days' notice, leaving with nothing but a small backpack. Edward explained to me that once the war began, he knew his life would change, but had no idea how quickly. After the military mobilization was announced, my friend who studies in Lappeenranta offered me a room, and I thought, "This is my opportunity," he told. Edward, who works as a market analyst, had little time to say goodbye to his girlfriend and grandmother, let alone arrange his finances. He must now transfer his monthly wages through a complicated system of cryptocurrencies and euro cards, a system he developed months before while helping friends leave Russia. Yet, financial difficulties are only one aspect of the changes that have happened in Lappeenranta. "I hear less Russian when I'm walking on the streets," Anna Nikitina, a Russian who has lived and worked in Lappeenranta for 8 years, reflected. "But this may not be because of the lack of tourism." After hearing about a civilian being reported to border security for simply speaking Russian on the street in a nearby city, Anna briefly considered not speaking her mother tongue in public. Although she is very happy and loves her life in Finland, she has broader concerns that the actions of her government, which she does not support in any shape or form, may lead to a prejudice against her nationality. Lappeenranta's mayor addressed these concerns in an interview. "We hope that the different nationalities can live peacefully together here, and we understand that the war is not the fault of local people," he said. The relationship between people in Finland and Russia goes far beyond the current war situation, and there is no doubt that Lappeenranta will remain a safe home for those who live there. However, there are signs of a long-term change between the two nations. From the simple choice to remove Russian translation from this border city's official webpage, to the recent announcement that Finland plans to build a fence on sections of its eastern border. Meanwhile, Russians in Finland and other European countries will have to try and navigate a landscape of border policies, financial sanctions, and increased separation from their families. For World Report, in Lappeenranta, Finland, I'm Owen O'Sullivan.
Next to Croatia and the picturesque city of Split, which boasts a vibrant arts, culture and music scene, diverse restaurants and is ideally positioned as a gateway to the scenic coastal region and neighbouring Croatian islands. It is therefore no surprise that Split has for many years been a popular tourist destination for visitors seeking Adriatic sunshine and culture. But, like many other cities in Europe which have courted tourism, large numbers of visitors and the businesses which attract them are proving to be a source of controversy, as Martina Relihan reports now from Croatia.
Ivica Poljak, the mayor of the Croatian city of Split, went on a recent walkabout down a city's center street. He was attempting to highlight what he sees as the devastation of its historic center. Split on the Adriatic Sea is the capital of Croatia's prized Dalmatian coast and the gateway to famous holiday islands such as Hvar and Brač. Split has a lot of history to defend as it grapples with ever-increasing waves of tourists each summer. The Roman Emperor Diocletian built his retirement home here in 305 AD. Known as Diocletian's Palace, the name doesn't really capture this wonderful complex of squares, temples and endless nooks and crannies which continue to define Split almost 2,000 years after its construction. Mayor Poljak laments the fact that local businesses can be repurposed into tourist facilities without obtaining the necessary change of use planning permission. A recent example has gained notoriety. A local clothes shop was transformed into yet another nightclub without complying with the regulations. And in a further attempt to cock a snook at Split's cultural legacy, it calls itself 305 AD, the Emperor's Palace. What Diocletian would make of all this is anybody's guess. But the historic centre which he bequeathed to Split is under siege from nightclubs and boasts, depending on your point of view, the moniker the Croatian capital of nightclubs. The mayor feels that the legal framework is there to deal with planning violations, but not the political will. He seems to lay the blame at the door of Croatia's culture minister, Nina Koršinek, who has recently stated that she does not view the public planning issue in Split as part of her remit. The impact of such bureaucratic bungling on the local residents of Split's historic centre is profound. Ivana is a lady in her 70s and a proud native of Split. She especially misses local shops. Since Croatia joined the EU in 2013, she feels the local businesses have been in a war of attrition with tourist facilities, which they have pretty comprehensively lost. Citizens of Split needing to do some serious shopping have to head for the Mall of Split, several miles from the city centre. People are ferried there in a free shuttle bus emblazoned with the logos of several international retail chains. Ivana's bete noire are the fast food outlets which abound in the city. However, the traditional Dalmatian konoba or tavern is succeeding in fending them off to some degree, as the owner of one of them, family-run Otprilike Ovacho, tells me. The name means something like this, and it doesn't compromise in its commitment to local seafood dishes. A big sign inside the door proclaims, "From the sea to the plate, no frying." The harbour is yards from the restaurant door, with the fresh fish from it transformed into dishes such as gregada, a fish stew served in a steaming casserole. And they shall also fight them on the beaches. Split has a thriving beach resort life centred on the beach of Bačica, just about a kilometre from the historic centre. It too feels under siege. A large group of locals protested on Bačvice recently against proposals to effectively privatise areas of the beach by fencing off parts of it and then charging for access to it. They brandished placards such as, "We have been chased out of city centres. Now we're being chased off the beaches." Another had a bilingual touch. "Ne, all-inclusive resort ima." The ima ending a nod to Croatian language case endings. The outcome of the campaign conducted under the slogan, javno je dobro, or public is good, hangs in the balance. The tourist season is now winding down here in Split, providing some respite for local residents and the tired staff of the city's restaurants, cafes and bars. Striking that tricky balance between facilitating the economically vital tourist industry, the protection of the city's wonderful historical legacy, while also giving local residents some space to breathe, will surely prove an ongoing dilemma for Split into the future. It seems unlikely that the city's civic activists would be packing away their placards anytime soon. For World Report, this is Martina Relihan in Split, Croatia.
Finally, we go to Spain, and Santiago de Compostela in the Galician region of northwest Spain is said to be the final resting place for the bones of the Apostle St. James. From the 9th century, the city became the final destination for pilgrims following a route that became known as El Camino. For many of the 300,000 people who make the journey each year, the walk brings a sense of harmony and community that is missing from the doom and gloom of the world's news bulletins, as Gareth Mason reports.
The Camino was first recommended to me by a genial old Buddhist who was struggling to help me still my busy mind. As an afterthought, he suggested I should one day take the trail to the medieval city of Santiago de Compostela. A few weeks ago, I finally heeded his advice and set off on the last leg of the Portuguese Camino from the walled cathedral city of Tui, just over the Spanish border. From here, I embarked with a small rucksack and dangerously new hiking boots, with 117 kilometres of Galician countryside separating me from my destination. The original pilgrims, or peregrinos, often survived arduous journeys through the charity of churches that sporadically lined the various routes that sprung up across Western Europe. Today's visitors are better supplied by the modern commerce and the all-seeing mobile phones with which they can plot their nightly lodgings and avoid straying from the path. Those like me, who were briefly escaping the grind of responsibilities, are limited to walking the last 100 kilometres, the minimum expected to earn one's certificate of pilgrimage. Many, at the extreme ends of their working lives, take their time to trek much further. One I met was a Slovenian woman in her 70s, who was 1,200 kilometres into her 13th Camino. The road was now more of a home to her than the distant apartment she'd left far behind, and the people she daily met have become a constantly evolving family. I had wanted my own space, but there was no room at the various inns, and was ultimately glad to make her acquaintance on the bed opposite of the cheap communal hostel room we shared with two others. For 6 days, my predictable home routine was upturned. I ate when hunger and a convenient village converged along the way. I stopped when I needed rest, and sometimes, when neither was available, I took once more to the road until I found them. One morning, I befriended a young Polish woman who had dogged my footsteps when we were both tentatively looking for a way back onto the sometimes elusive trail. She told me about her dark childhood and the heavy decisions weighing over her future. While I was old enough to be the father from whom she was estranged, I was soon telling her about my own false steps and youthful folly, which she mulled over with a wisdom beyond her years. Over the week, I met scores of folk from Colombia to South Korea who were briefly shedding their national identities and embracing our commonality before we gently bid farewell without feeling the need to become Facebook friends. The myriad motives were often undisclosed, but for most, it was an ambition that preceded or followed some major personal event. My fellow travellers were unfailingly kind and considerate. Groups formed, broke, and reformed with the half promise of meeting again at some vague juncture along the way. Mutual goodwill did not seem coincidental. I recognised how on my daily commute in London, the chemistry was also at work between my fellow travellers. But in the depths of the underground, the humanity tended to take instead a downward spiral. The enormous blisters brought about by my tight new boots and shoddy socks only added to the sense of achievement when I finally stumbled into Santiago and collapsed beneath the shadow of its magnificent cathedral amid hundreds of jubilant fellow pilgrims. Here, I visited the tomb of St. James, the gentle apostle who was transposed into a warrior figure who was used to inspire the old Spanish Empire to plunder Incan and Aztec gold and commit genocide upon tens of millions of inhabitants in the New World. But that bloodthirsty history belongs to a dark old world that is rarely now celebrated for its conquests. Thankfully, the Camino that remains showcases humanity in a far more progressive light. For World Report, this is Gareth Mason from Galicia.
Well, that's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Elaine Devlin. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/World Report or wherever you get your podcasts. We're back again at the same time next week. But until then, from myself, Justin McCarthy, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.